Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. A busy day before the NBA trade deadline yesterday, as we saw some big moves, especially out west. The Clippers ship Sweet Lou to Atlanta for playoff Rondo. The Nuggets get Aaron Gordon from the Magic, and the Mavs get some shooting help for Luka, picking up J.J. Redick from New Orleans. Stephen A., it's the Wild West for a reason. Talk to me. How do you handicap the West race thus far?
I got to tell you something. I think the Clippers have gotten better. Obviously, Anthony Davis is the X factor. If he's healthy, the Lakers go back to the finals. If he's not, the Lakers go out maybe in the first round. It's that dramatic of a shift if Anthony Davis is not healthy. I would tell you that the Clippers will be right there, and I can't sleep on the Denver Nuggets. I've been thinking about Utah. I've been thinking about, obviously, the Portland Trail Blazers because of that backcourt with Dame and CJ. And what they bring to the table. And I like the fact that they picked up Powell from Toronto as well, although I'm wondering how many of those mid-sized guys do you need, 6'5", 6'6", that kind of thing. I'm wondering about that, but nevertheless, it is what it is. What I would tell you is this. Denver, keeping Michael Porter Jr., having DeJoker, having Jamal Murray, and adding Aaron Gordon to the mix. This dude, he can be physical. You know, from a physicality perspective, he can be one of those individuals that's helping to guard LeBron and others. He's a legit 6'8". He's a Skywalker. He's averaged 14 this year, shooting about, 37% from three-point range, 43% from the field. He's a big-time addition to the Denver Nuggets, and I definitely think is an incredible plus that could put Denver over the hump potentially. It's something interesting. Remember, they had Jeremy Grant last year, who obviously was incredibly impressive and ended up getting that big contract from Detroit because of it. This guy, to me, is on that level, if not better, in terms of what he's going to be capable of doing for the Denver Nuggets. Not to mention the fact that he can help, you know, because you had Millsap there for years, who's an age-old veteran, very, very savvy and can be on a roster, but nevertheless, that's what you had. This guy, Aaron Gordon, brings that to the table. So I would tell you right now, Utah can't be ignored, but neither can Denver. So I'm looking at Utah, the Clippers, and Denver battling. If the Lakers don't have Anthony Davis, one of those three, it's a crapshoot right there. And even if they have Anthony Davis, it's going to be a rough out. They're going to make it a rough out.
Well, Anthony Davis is the whole key, as you said.
Yeah.
Just keep in mind, LeBron and AD are so good together. And no, they don't have Rondo anymore, and that may be an issue, but Schroeder's a good player. Think about what Denver did in last year's playoffs. They beat Utah in an all-time great first-round series.
Yes.
And then they go on to knock off the Clippers, come from behind. And they were no match for the Lakers. I mean, Jokic and Murray were both playing at MVP level. And there's a difference between, like, MVP level, apparently, and what LeBron and AD can do. They were no match for the Lakers. But adding Aaron Gordon, especially if AD may not be 100%. Aaron Gordon, besides everything else, from everything I know about him, he's a good guy, right? Like, he'll be good for the locker room and all that stuff.
Right.
But he's also, as you mentioned, a Skywalker who, so far this year, is finally hitting his threes at an acceptable level, even more, almost 38% from three. He's taken four of them a game. That really adds something because you have to remember when you look at this Nuggets roster, it's not just that they have Jamal Murray, who's normally an excellent player, maybe like an all-star level player, is that they have playoff Rondo, playoff Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray, what he showed in the playoffs last year, is he goes from maybe an all-star to an MVP when you need him most. You put that together with Jokic, a guy having one of the greatest offensive seasons ever, and you have Porter Jr. hitting shots, and now you have Aaron Gordon. That's a whole lot. And I would just also tell you, because we've been through all the teams, the West, you're swimming with sharks. You mentioned Denver. You mentioned Utah, Stephen A., the Lakers, the Clippers. The Blazers add Powell. The Mavs added J.J. Redick.
Yes.
The Mavs are my sleeper team in the playoffs anyway. Don't let
Porzingis stay healthy. You know how I feel about J.J. Redick. We know what a fan I am of J.J. Redick. I hate the fact that the Sixers lost him. I always thought that the Sixers should have found a way to keep J.J. Redick, regardless of what you pointed out about his defensive liability. So I think that that's a big pickup for the Dallas Mavericks because you lost Seth Curry. And you need somebody.
Yep.
And even though Seth Curry, you know, could arguably a better pure shooter per se, you know what? And he's a little bit bigger, or at least he appears to be. Here's the thing. J.J. Redick's ability to move without the basketball is what you cannot minimize because you got to have eyes in the back of your head watching everywhere he is because you still can't leave him open. And getting back to Denver, I don't even understand, Max, how there was even a discussion as to whether or not the Denver Nuggets would consider trading Michael Porter Jr. I will remind everybody, this brother,
he's offensively
this brother is, listen, we know his injury history, but this dude right here is averaging 16 a game. He's shooting 52% from the field. He shoot like 42, 43% from three-point range.
Yep.
I mean, what? And he just gets started. He's 22.
Yep. Listen,
like going on Michael Porter.
The only reason he wasn't drafted higher is because of the potential injury, because of the injury history and everything coming in.
And it was, and it says something when the great Jerry West, passes up on you twice. Because the Clippers had the 12th and the 13th pick in that draft, and they didn't take him.
But as long as he's healthy,
Jerry West doesn't usually miss.
As long as he's healthy, that offense is just going up and up and up.
Michael Porter's special. Yeah. I like Michael Porter. I like Michael Porter.
I want to say this about the Mavs, too. The way that team is constructed with Luka, if Porzingis stays healthy, now you add Redick. They have got Kleba is like 6'10". He shoots over 40%.
Here's the problem. You keep bringing up Porzingis and his health. I will say this about Porzingis because I want to say this about him when you mentioned him last week. There are certain guys that might be injury prone, but then you could be so much so that people get physical with you on purpose with the intent to not harm you or your career or anything, but they know you're relatively soft. See, when freak injuries happen, they just happen. They just come with the game. But in Porzingis' case, because he's 7'3",
yeah, he's a giant.
I think people look at him and say, look, man, all we got to do is get physical with him.
Look,
he can't take it. That's what they said.
Embiid is injury prone. AD is now sidelined. Yeah. He's been injury prone throughout his career. Porzingis,
but
Embiid is 6'11 and better.
But Embiid is strong, and he usually ends up injuring himself, like the way he came down on his leg and his knee locked in. Okay, rare. Anthony Davis, he's a finesse player. I'm not going to call him soft. He's a finesse player. But there are people on his own team who wish he was a bit tougher. And remember, we had him on the show. And you remember when the Clippers were talking about him? They were last year before when they were supposed to meet the Lakers, they were talking about the thing about Anthony Davis is he's elite. You can't stop him. But you know that he's going to get hurt. Now, that didn't happen in last year's playoffs, but it happened this season.
But Luka now has everyone on the floor with him can bomb. Everyone on the floor can bomb from the one through the five. They can all
bomb. And Luka is a big-time passer.
Yep.
Yes. So Dallas could get very interesting.
Fellas.
But I don't consider them better than Utah, the Clippers, or Denver. And we didn't even bring up Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix went 8-0 in the bubble, added Chris Paul hasn't looked back.
What about Phoenix? They're second in the West.
Yeah.
Yeah, how come you guys haven't mentioned them?
Because they're relatively young. They have great coaching. Monty Williams and his staff are doing a phenomenal job. All right, and I think he's a Coach of the Year candidate. Chris Paul and his leadership. I actually think that Chris Paul, to some degree, should be in the MVP conversation, considering what he's doing to lead that team. It's just that Devin Booker's on the squad as well. But you take, and they got a star, Devin Booker. But some of the pieces around them are so young, you just get the sense they'll be very interesting. They'll be a hard out, but they're a piece away from having legitimate contender status against these more experienced teams come postseason time. That's why we don't mention the Phoenix Suns as much.
They got, you know, you're right, and yet they went 8-0 in the bubble. And they added Chris Paul. Now DeAndre Ayton is starting to have games where you go, oh, look at that. And it's, I think it's the Chris Paul effect,
it
not
is the
just
Chris
maturing.
Paul effect. It is
and then
the
you have Devin Booker, who I just
star.
Said Jamal Murray and Spider Mitchell. And Devin Booker is one of those guys where in a playoff series, he might be the best guy on the floor.
Yes.
The Suns are very live. We didn't really even focus on the Clippers, who you said should make the Western Conference Finals. The West is a beast.
Yeah.
Or Portland, by the way, who added shooting.
And Nurkic is coming back Friday. He's coming back.
Howell, Nurkic, join McCollum, and Damian Lillard. It is real in the West.
And Melo. Let's not forget Carmelo.
It's going to be a fun playoff
Let's not forget
run.
Carmelo.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yesterday's trade deadline saw some big-time moves with names like Aaron Gordon going from the Magic to the Nuggets, Victor Oladipo to the Rockets, to the Heat, and Rajon Rondo heading back to L.A., only this time with the Clippers. Stephen A., who are the biggest winners coming out of the trade deadline?
Well, listen, for me, it's the Clippers. That's the first team that comes to my mind. Obviously, I can't ignore what Denver has done. They're right up there. The Chicago Bulls. With Vucevic joining Zach LaVine, I think that's a big-time pickup with the Chicago Bulls, make no mistake about it. But the Clippers jump out to me because Rondo's leadership from the point guard spot was exemplary last year in the NBA Finals and pretty much for the playoffs. That's number one. Number two, you know that's exactly what the Clippers need to take them some of that responsibility off of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Yes, they're both terrific. And they're terrific because they make things happen for themselves because they've had no one that creates opportunities for them. Patrick Beverley's a defensive ace. Reggie Jackson is a guy that looks for his own shot. He can handle the ball. He can shoot the ball. But he's not a quintessential, prototypical point guard. He doesn't set up the action for you and take some of the responsibilities off of their shoulders. Everything is a challenge for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George because there's nobody setting the stage and running the show for them. And the fact that you have Rondo to do that for you is a huge, huge deal that I think helps them exponentially. And that's why it stands out in my mind, not to mention the fact that he's in L.A. and last year he won the championship with the Lakers. And so considering the fact that in all likelihood the Lakers will be your stiffest competition, the fact that you are incredibly familiar with what Frank Vogel wants to do, with what LeBron James likes to do, and you being Rajon Rondo, you know, that intellectual, cerebral ball player that he is, I think it's going to come to pass where he's going to make it exponentially tougher for the Los Angeles Lakers to knock off the Clippers because of his presence and also what he can teach Paul George and Kawhi Leonard about the Lakers in the event that they confront. Not that they don't know how to play against them or whatever, but having somebody that is as smart as Rondo, who's a point guard, who just won the championship with them, same coach, same stars. I think that goes a long way.
I almost wanted to take the Clippers. I mean, I wanted to take them, but they had to give up Lou Williams to get Rondo. So I agree that Rondo could be a tipping point type player because they really needed him, which is why they pursued him in the offseason. But they had to give something up to get him that they could also use in Lou Williams. I think the biggest winner, therefore, is the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat picking up Oladipo. Now, you brought up he's not shooting it great this year, but for his career, he's a 79% free throw shooter and a 35% three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. That's good enough. Like, he can shoot it well enough, and he can get to the basket, and he can get his own shot, and he can set up teammates if he needs to. He's an all-around, excellent, like, combo backcourt player, scorer, whatever you want to call him. He's being added to Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn. Everyone I just described, same thing. They can get their own shot. They can shoot it. They can set up teammates. These are guys who are very difficult. None of them is James Harden or Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving. But all of them, to different degrees, and we saw it with Hero in the playoffs, and we see it with Butler all the time, and especially in the playoffs, to different degrees, can create defensive problems for the other team. That's five dudes I just mentioned. I didn't even mention Duncan Robinson, who can bomb, Bam, who's excellent, Iggy, who can still play. Adding Oladipo to that mix, I think there's now a big four in the Eastern Conference. They join the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Nets.
I get you. I just don't think you're taking into account the fact that you got an additional individual who's not 100% that's going to take the ball away from some of those guys that you mentioned. I think next year they'd be better than they would this year. And Oladipo will be better too.
All right, we'll leave it on that note. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
And we welcome in Dana White to First Take. Dana, great to have you as always. Miocic and Ngannou rematch. The first thing that strikes me is that Ngannou is the favorite again, in spite of the fact that Stipe beat him the first time, is one of the most well-rounded fighters in the world. Ngannou looked bad against, he lost that fight against Lewis and didn't really do anything afterwards. Now, since then, he's had some good names on the resume, but it ain't like Stipe hasn't. Took two out of three from Cormier. Why do you think Ngannou is favored again here?
I'm with you. I'm looking at it right now. DraftKings has it at Stipe plus 110, Francis minus 130. This guy just can't get the respect, man. He's beat everybody. He's beat all the big names in the heavyweight division, including Francis Ngannou, and he still doesn't get the respect. But all the Stipe Miocic fans are making money out there, so good for them.
Meantime, Ngannou, has he shown you something since the last fight? To me, it looks like the same guy. If he, you know, he's a big and strong and devastating, but I haven't seen him in a situation since the Stipe fight that made me think, oh, things are going to be different this time. What's your thought about the Ngannou we're going to see in the rematch?
Yeah, he's definitely a more well-rounded fighter. He's worked on his wrestling and his takedown defense. And, you know, listen, he's ripped through and knocked out some serious guys since he lost. You know, but Stipe is going to be in his face. He's going to put that pressure on him that he's not used to. And I could tell yesterday at the press conference that Stipe is very confident. They've been working on something that they see in Francis's game. The question is, you know, at his age and where he is now, can he go out and implement that game plan?
Let's talk about Stipe for a second. It's always been interesting to me, and we've talked about it before, even on this show, the kind of strategy in the UFC. It sort of combines the NBA and NFL in the sense that it's very star-driven, and yet it's also very brand-driven. You know, if you see UFC, what that means, and you've survived the retirement and you know, of a lot of big-name stars where people are like, well, what's the UFC going to do after this guy's not there? And you keep rolling. With that in mind, what does Stipe mean, one of the most consistent heavyweight champions you've had? Usually light heavy's been the glamour division, but he's been consistent in the biggest weight class. What has he meant to the UFC?
Yeah, no, he's very important to us, you know. He's going to go down in history as the greatest heavyweight of all time, and he's put on some of the most monumental, incredible performances ever in the history of the company. He's very important, very important. And I'm all about guys who love to be the world champion and want to be the best and want to challenge themselves against the best, you know? And him taking on Cormier three times and literally facing the entire heavyweight division and then agreeing to come back. He was just, Everybody is finally, they're not giving him the respect at the sports books, but the fans and the media are finally giving him the respect after he beat Cormier again, that he is the best heavyweight ever. He could have retired after that. Could have retired and rode off into the sunset with all the accolades that he was getting. No, he's going to go out and he's going to try to face this big, bad monster again in Francis Ngannou. I love it, respect it, and he's one of the all-time greats, and he's been amazing for us.
Overeem, Dos Santos, Verdum, Ngannou, Cormier twice, and I got the feeling Cormier was a little lucky to win that first fight. I mean, it was a sneaky right hand, but I don't know. Look, he's been excellent, but has not captured the imagination of the public the way John Jones has. Maybe no one has in terms of his greatness at that size. If John Jones is going to keep his head on straight and successfully make this move to heavyweight, what are your thoughts about whoever wins this fight, the winner against John Bones Jones for the heavyweight championship of the world?
Yeah, Jones has been training, for this moment for a while now. He's been putting on weight. He's been lifting weights and preparing to move up to heavyweight. So I'm sure he'll be watching closely on Saturday night. And then, you know, whoever wins, we'll figure out when this fight happens. I'm assuming what makes the most sense is Jones versus the winner sometime in the fall.
Dana, this is going to be a sellout in Jacksonville. And what strikes me about that is, number one, sports are back. The fans are back. It also strikes me a lot of COVID in Florida. And a sellout means not the same kind of social distancing. Why the choice to go for a sellout, and what precautions will be taken?
Well, let me start here. It's already sold out. It sold out in minutes.
Right.
And we broke the arena record. So people are excited to be back. And when you talk about COVID cases, there's 143 cases in Jacksonville right now. There's about a million people that live in Jacksonville, and there's 143 cases. So I'm feeling confident.
Habib recently told you he's done for good. And you seem to come out of that last meeting like, okay, he's given me his answer and we have to move on. But Dana, you've been around the fight game, not just in MMA, but boxing before that a long time. Marvin Hagler died recently, the great middleweight champion. He was one of the very, very few to just walk away when he was still great and turn down all the money. You think we've seen the last of Habib in the octagon?
I do. You know, I chased this guy around for a few months and tried to get him to stick around. And, you know, a lot of these guys, when you've seen them come back, it's always been financial. This guy is not going to have any financial problems anytime soon. So I think he really has retired. I don't think we'll see him again. And, he's never going to need the money.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask you something else. But since we're on that topic, you recently said that the Mount Rushmore of the UFC, and Mount Rushmore is always about who you leave off, not who you put on, right? You said it's Hoist Gracie. Get that. The Gracie brothers sent them to show everyone about BJJ. Look at this little dude. He can beat everybody. Amanda Nunes. Get that, boy. She's the greatest female MMA practitioner of all time, right? John Bones Jones. I get that. And Chuck Liddell. Nothing wrong with any of those guys on the list, but I just mentioned Habib. Dana might be the best I've seen. What about Anderson Silva? I mean, GSP, you left some guys off. Tell me why those four and not, say, the three I just mentioned.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You got to understand, I'll do one of these press tours and guys start asking me questions, and off the top of my head, all the great fighters that have fought in the UFC, you know, I got to crank this thing off the top of my head. I saw people talking about this. Plus, how many people can you have on the Mount Rushmore? I mean, if you look at Mount Rushmore, you know, there aren't 10 people on there. But yeah, there's no doubt. Anderson Silva and Habib both should be on there too. It's so hard to pick those kind of things. But yes, I agree with you. Those two should be too.
GSP too. I mean, Matt Hughes was unstoppable
GSP,
at the time,
Matt Hughes.
And he came back against him, and GSP came back against him. You know.
I agree with you.
The great Dana White, ladies and gentlemen. Dana, thanks as always. Look forward to seeing you soon, and can't wait for Saturday night.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Saturday night, UFC 260. You know what it is, Max. And- and Dana just broke it down. The heavyweight championship, the rematch, Miocic and Ngannou. Let's get it. Fellas, back to the NBA. The trade deadline has come and gone.
DraftKings is the official daily fantasy sports partner of UFC. And this Saturday, new players can play free for over $50,000 in prizes when you make your deposit. Download the DraftKings app and sign up with promo code Octagon for your shot at $50,000 in prizes. Only on DraftKings.
Despite sitting at fourth place in the West and having lost four in a row, the Lakers saw the trade deadline come and go without making a move. Dave McMenamin tweeted yesterday that the Lakers brass recognize the health of LeBron and AD will be the ultimate factor in the team's success this season. We now welcome Berk. Where are you? And wait for it.
There we go.
There he is. Okay, confirm that you're there. How we doing, Perk? Good to see you. I'm actually going to start with you for a change. Tell me this. Are you surprised that the Lakers stayed put during this and didn't make any moves?
Yeah, Molly, I am surprised. I mean, have anybody watched the Lakers lately since LeBron James been out? Last night I'm watching the game. And they were shooting the ball so hard, it was hitting off the glass so hard, I started ducking in my house. I mean, listen, I said this. When LeBron went out, this was going to be an audition for the Lakers supporting cast to show what they were made of. And right now, I'm afraid. If you're a Laker fan, you should be afraid right now. You should be concerned. And I thought that yesterday the Lakers should have been a little bit aggressive for us pursuing and making trades right now, because what I'm seeing on the floor is just not working. Dennis Schroeder, he's not playing to the level that everyone thought or expected him to play, including myself. I mean, I don't know, you know, what's happening as far as the contract situation. Sometimes that could mess with your head. Right now, guys like Caldwell Pope are not shooting the ball like they should be. He's not performing well. Marcus Gasol is not living up to what they thought he was going to be. And I thought that the Lakers needed to make a move yesterday or do something. Because right now what we're witnessing is that the others are just not getting it. So with losing Rajon Rondo, losing Dwight Howard, losing JaVale McGee, I thought, hey, right now, looking at this roster, the Lakers have to do something.
Well, what specifically do you think they should have done, KP?
Well, I mean, listen, I said this. They should have probably went got JaVale McGee. And I understand the rules, right, that when a team trades you, you're not eligible to come back unless it goes through another team and you have to go through all these different scenarios. Well, we all know in the world of NBA, GMs owe GMs a favor. So I thought maybe they could have worked out something with Cleveland where they got JaVale McGee traded, got him to another team, got him waived, and then they picked him up in the buyout market. I thought yesterday that they should have been ultimate and it should have been really, really aggressive trying to get Kyle Lowry. I thought they really should have went out and tried to pursue him and persuade Masai Ujiri to hey, we ready to make something happen. Because here it is. The Lakers get Kyle Lowry, the whole narrative changed, and guess what? The league gets scared. All right, Kyle Lowry, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis on the floor at one time. That's something to be worried about. So I thought they should have won, tried to go out, and not saying that they're not gonna try to get Andre Drummond in the buyout market, but they should have definitely pursued Kyle Lowry yesterday.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, you could have mentioned Lonzo Ball too, but we all know that they don't want LeVar Ball making headlines because of the Lakers again. Then you got Kyle Lowry. The problem with Kyle Lowry is that he wanted two additional years at $50 million, 25 per, even though he just turned 35, and there's a lot of teams throughout the NBA that's going to be reluctant to give him that money. So it'll be real interesting to see what happens with him in the offseason, all right? As a result of LeBron going down, here's the only thing that I would say, KP. They ain't no replacing LeBron James. There's no replacement for him. And so you know that he's going to be back in about a month or so. You know that he's not 100% healthy. You know that it's an audition, just like you said, about that supporting cast. But it's really about them upping their game. Let's face reality. None of us looked at the Lakers and expected them to win but so much without LeBron James and AD. They're champions and they're favorites this year because of LeBron and AD. Without them, they'd be in a lottery, and we all know.
But even with them, the Brooklyn's big three, if they're all healthy, I don't see them losing.
No,
I think the Lakers.
Brooklyn winning
and the Kyle Lowry move, I get it, Perk, but when you have to match salaries, you're still not giving Masai anything he wanted. And we know what I noticed? You know who's still a Laker today? And I think this is what scuttled the deals? Talen Horton-Tucker, who's only 21 years old. I think the league likes him a lot. I think Masai Ujiri liked him. I think the Lakers didn't want to give him up. And they'd have to give up everything they've got to get Lowry. They wouldn't have a bench. They wouldn't have a rotation. Lonzo is the question. I get that Daddy can make problems off the court, maybe they think, for them. But Perk, Lonzo with LeBron and AD works to me. And I think that's a mistake. They should have pursued him.
Yeah, but and I'm not taking nothing from Lonzo. But Lonzo needed to, in my opinion, Lonzo needed to go to a team where he's going to have the ball in his hand, where he's going to be able to be that floor general. I'm not saying that he can't play off the ball, because he can, but that's not his strength, okay? So when I'm looking at a guy that the Lakers need to fill in that gap, a team that's on the rise, that's trying to repeat to get a championship, you don't want to go with someone that haven't made the playoffs. You want to go with someone that's battle-tested. That's why I said Kyle Lowry. I mean, this is a champion. This is a guy that have been in multiple rounds of the playoffs, multiple series.
So would you have made the deal? So Perk, hold on. Would you have traded Schroeder and KCP, because now you got to make the salaries work, right? And Talen Horton-Tucker and someone else to make the salaries work, because they wanted THT. That's who they really wanted. Would you have traded four dudes off the team for Kyle Lowry?
I thought it was three to make the salaries work. I thought it was three.
Yeah, right, to make it work. But then he, that's right. That's just to make the salaries work. But Masai wanted Talen Horton-Tucker, right? And the Lakers didn't want to give him up. Would you have given him up with the other three players?
I mean, listen, this is why I'm not a GM. But, yeah, I would have made the move. I would have made the move, because here it is. The Lakers are trying to win now. And we all know with Dennis Schroeder, they've been going through contract situations. You know, the Lakers didn't put out contract extensions, you know, and he didn't turn them down. So, like yesterday, I was telling Richard Jefferson on the jump, right? He was saying, would you give up all that for Kyle Lowry, who's the rental, right? And I said, well, right now, Dennis Schroeder is a rental. He's a rental because he hasn't signed a contract extension. You don't know if he's going to re-sign back with the Lakers. So, I mean, you got to pick your poison. What are you trying to do? And I think if you have a champion, the greatest Raptor of all time sitting there, right there, a game changer, one of the best floor generals in the game today, Kyle Lowry, the ultimate leader, the ultimate competitor, you got a chance to grab him and throw him in the mix with LeBron James and Anthony Davis when they get back healthy, I think you got to go all in for it.
Go ahead, Molly.
Okay, yeah, we'll keep it moving. The Clippers made a major addition to their team yesterday by acquiring Rajon Rondo from the Hawks. Rondo already has won titles with the Celtics and Lakers and has been given the name Playoff Rondo for the way he turns it in the postseason. Perk, where do you rank the Clippers now among the West favorites?
Well, they're number one. They're number one, and here's why. Clippers were missing one thing, a leader, a floor general. And I said it in the offseason that they needed to go out and sign Rondo in the free agency, but they didn't. And they went, got him, and made it, and went, picked him up before the trade deadline. Was a huge pickup, because the reason that the Clippers struggle at times is because Kawhi and PG don't have their legs in the fourth quarter, because they're asked to do something that they're not used to doing, and that's being playmakers, bringing the ball up the floor, getting guys in sets. That's not what they do. They get buckets, and on the defensive end, they lock you up. Now adding Rajon Rondo takes pressure off of everyone. Kawhi, PG, Ty Lue, everyone. He is the ultimate leader. You need that guy in that locker room. Just remember, right? We all thought last year, and I'm not taking anything from Kyle Kuzma, with the Lakers, we thought that it was Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Kyle Kuzma as a mini big three. Well, it turned out to be Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Rajon Rondo when it mattered the most. Rajon Rondo is the one that stepped up in the finals and delivered in great fashion. So we all know what he's capable of doing. He's one of the best floor generals that this game has saw, and the Clippers definitely upgraded by acquiring him yesterday before the trade deadline. So the Clippers right now rank number one in the Western Conference.
I agree with everything you just said about Rondo. He is not just by reputation, but in fact an all-star when it matters most in the playoffs. And that gives him three all-stars when it matters most. It'll probably also help Paul George, who needs the help under pressure, and not make Kawhi into something he's really not, point forward. That's not really him. They also still have Batum and Patrick Beverley and Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris and Serge Ibaka. They got a crew, but what they don't have, Perk, they don't have Lou Williams anymore. And in the offseason, if they could have just signed Rondo, they have him and Lou Williams, that's one thing. But the addition of Rondo, don't you have to subtract Lou Williams now, who can go get you a bucket when you need it most?
No, because Lou Will wasn't playing well. He was playing up and down this season. And you could tell in the energy that kind of, in my opinion, from watching the Clippers, that Lou Will and the Clippers had ran this course. Like, you could plug Reggie Jackson into that role, and he could be a guy that come off the bench and give you 15 a night. I was with Reggie. I watched him stepped up when we was in Oklahoma City as a young gun. He stepped up and came in off the bench when everybody was wondering, when we traded James Harden, who was going to be that third option. I watched Reggie Jackson do that. So you put Reggie Jackson in the role, he's capable of coming in and giving you that 15 points a night. By the way, Max, listen. Ty Lue is bringing Marcus Morris off the bench. You know why? He's kind of putting him in the six-man role. So we have to remember, he's coming in and being aggressive. Nicholas Batum is the guy that's in the starting lineup. So they have enough depth, in my opinion, coming in off the bench to make up for the lack of, for the missing of Lou Will now that he's gone.
Well, first of all, I don't have a problem with Lou Williams being gone in this respect. I know the brother can play. But let's understand a couple of things. Number one, he hasn't been the same since Doc Rivers departed. Playing for Ty Lue is a little bit different for him than playing for Doc Rivers. We know that. I think the acquisition of Luke Kennard hurt him. Now, Luke Kennard's only giving you about 19 minutes a game, okay? Only averaging about 7 points a game. But when you look at what they were looking for from him, if you're Lou Williams, you're saying, what the hell did you need him for while I was here? Especially when Lou Williams is in the last year of a contract that's paying him $8 million, and this brother, Luke Kennard, starts getting paid a minimum of $13 million. Starting next year, he got a 4-year, $50-plus million deal on the books. Lou Williams is making $8 million a year. And so when you take that into consideration and you look at the fact that last year, coming into the postseason, what the expectations were, not only was their bubble play compromised because of COVID-19, but then you got yourself into a tizzy because you had to go back to Atlanta for a funeral and found your way at Magic City ordering lemon pepper wings. And so that became the headline, which was very, very embarrassing, okay? So then you come back and you play.
Where the lemon pepper wings are now.
Listen, I ain't hating on them. I like lemon pepper wings. I like them. And damn it, I'll confess, I've been to Magic City before, damn it. Long, long, long time ago, but I've been there. I understand. Here's the deal, though. In the end, him going there at that particular moment in time reeked of irresponsibility. He got a lot of criticisms for it. When you watched him play, he hasn't really been the same since. Then you take into account what happened in the bubble when they had a 3-1 lead and they blew it to Denver. So all of these things have compromised his cachet and the possibility of him getting the kind of new deal we all know he richly deserves. And then you bring in Luke Kennard on top of all of that. Yep. So I think that with Lou Williams, there's been an absence of inspiration. I don't think his skills, KP, have diminished that drastically. I just think there are some people that just need a new environment, a new place to go.
Well, and I think
he needed that, and that's why he's Atlanta.
The Reggie Jackson point is good. I think also Batum's career resurgence. He's had a renaissance in his career.
I'm going to warn you, if you're going to bring up Nicholas Batum, Never, ever, ever bring him up in the presence of Michael Jordan or anybody in Charlotte.
Because that's right.
I'll tell you that right now. He took the money, and that was it. Now, listen.
Jordan doesn't speak about this. He wouldn't even talk to me about it, but I'm here to tell you something right now. It ain't no accident that you used to see Jordan on the bench, and then once Nicholas Batum arrived and stole all his money, you didn't see Jordan on the bench because he was scared he'd do something to him. Because he felt like he got robbed.
He robbed him.
That Nicholas Batum, so it's kind of hard.
But that's not that Nicholas Batum anymore.
This is more like the Nicholas Batum who got the money. We'll see come playoff time, but my God, you talk about highway robbery. That man, he didn't just rob the Hornets. He robbed the city of Charlotte.
He retired.
He should have been arrested.
He's actually coming out of retirement right now.
Robbed him of money.
Batum signed the deal and retired from basketball for a couple years.
That's what I'm saying. You can't bring him up around Michael Jordan.
But he's back now. And look at like the rotation. To your point about not needing Lou Williams as much, if you have Rondo and PG-13 and Kawhi and Ibaka and Morris and Batum and Beverly and Reggie Jackson, you got enough.
Go ahead, KP.
And Big Zubac. But here's the thing.
Right, Zubac.
If they could have kept Lou Will, they probably would have. But again, once again, in order to make the trade work, the salaries got to match up, right? Rajon Rondo making around $8 or $9 million a year. So the Clippers had to do what's best to get them over the hump. And again, I'm not saying that this is a fact. This is my own opinion. But Kawhi Leonard has a player option at the end of this year. We don't know what he's going to do. So at the end of the day, the Clippers got to make sure that they put themselves in the best position possible to win a championship around Kawhi so they can make sure that he signed back. And whether it's next season or whatever, and for the long haul. So the Clippers got to make sure they do everything to try to win the championship this year or at least make it to the finals.
Well, they have a very well-constructed team now.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And just as an aside, fellas, Nicholas Batum, remember in 2016, I had to look this up, signed with Charlotte, 5 years, $120 million, and proceeded to average 15, 11, 9, and 3.
Oh, you're going year by year points. I'm like 15, 11, and 9. That's awesome.
No, 15, 11, 9, and 3. Year by year.
How much money he makes per basket, right?
We call Charlotte the Bible Belt, okay? Because, you know, you got a lot of folks out there that got God in their life or whatever, and they pray that Nicholas Batum never come back. That's what it is.
But on this team, he's a great fit.
8 points, he's shooting 43% from three-point range, only averaging 8 points a game. The bottom line is you do see a resurgence from Nicholas Batum, give him props where it's due. And he did have some injuries
in
Charlotte.
And he's never been a stat guy.
He's had some injuries in Charlotte with all due respect. But here's the bottom line. He committed a criminal act in Charlotte. He stole.
He's never been a 20-point guy, though.
I'm just saying. He stole,
damn it. Not a 3-point guy,
either. He stole. In Charlotte, he stole. He stole.
A highway robbery.
It was a criminal offense.
All right, fellas, you want to get to Dwight Howard really quick?
A felony.
I wanted to try to get your thoughts on this. Okay, so the night started off great, obviously, for Dwight Howard receiving his championship ring from last season. It wouldn't end on a high note, however, as Howard would be ejected after the end of the first quarter for intentionally walking into Montrezl Harrell on his way to the bench. Stephen A., your reaction to Howard getting ejected.
I don't like it. I think it's a complete overreaction. He had already received the technical, but I don't even think about Dwight Howard when I think about the ejection. I think about in the fourth quarter with a little over 4 minutes left when there was a foul call against Dennis Schroeder, and the referee teed him up because he jumped up and said, no, it was an emotional reaction and it was not excessive. And Reggie Miller, who was doing the telecast, accurately pointed out it's excessive. Let the human element, play itself out. The league, and I love the NBA, y'all know that, and I know a lot of people in the league office, but it has gotten really, really bad with these officials and their willingness to just distribute texts and even eject guys. I understand fans are not really in attendance full throttle as of yet, but the bottom line is this. We're watching on television. The product, thank God it's on the court. My God, could you think about the fans? Stop throwing people out of games, acting like it doesn't matter to us. It matters. We're not just watching the teams play. We're looking to see these individuals play on the team, and you're robbing us of that as a league when you so easily eject people and assess these technical fouls all the damn time. It's ridiculous.
I think that's a good point. That's not what I take away from it, though. My first thought is Dwight is doing this passive-aggressive thing. He doesn't have to do it. Like, he's not being slick. Why do this? I mean, first of all, you can do that if you're trying to antagonize someone if you get away with it. If you make it that obvious that the ref tees you up and now you're out of the game and your own head coach afterwards calls it selfish, who do you think you're fooling?
Max, stop it, man. Listen, man, look, it's part of the game, man. This is what you want, man. This is why people talk about the league is soft. This is entertainment. I was looking forward to watching Montrezl Harrell and Dwight go in it last night. I saw the tension when they first started guarding one another. I said, oh, we got some smoke. This is what you want. You want to see guys competing. By the way, Dwight Howard was bodying him and going to work, by the way, and blocking
so this was
shots
unnecessary.
On the defensive end. You want to see this, Max?
No, it's unnecessary. Be slick about it, at least.
Oh, man.
The league needs to stop. We paid it. We want to see the players. Don't be throwing them out the games and just issuing tech.
Notice how Doc didn't complain about the refs after.
Listen, I know they get excessive from time to time. They got to watch the language. But they need to stop. The referees need to develop tougher skin, and the players need to be in the game.
It's officially the weekend. Goodbye.